ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Bhagavad Gita as it is, introduction, page 18. The Lord descends to this mortal world to show his pastimes in Vrindavan, which are full of happiness. When Lord Sri Krishna was in Vrindavan, his activities with his cowherd boyfriends, with his damsel friends, and with the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and with the cows were all full of happiness. The total population of Vrindavan knew nothing but Krishna. Lord Krishna even discouraged his father, Nanda Maharaj, from worshipping the demigod Indra, because he wanted to establish the fact that people need not worship any demigod. They need not worship the Supreme, they need only worship the Supreme Lord, because their ultimate goal is to return to his abode. So now Krishna is described. It's going deeper now into the nature of the living entity, the need of these instructions. So he's described the Sanatan Dharma of the living entity. So with that, then that explains that he is servant. This is a central principle. Is that the Lord, the living entity, because of this idea that he is the controller and he is the enjoyer, then it has to be established that, okay, so there must be some process. There must be something to elevate the living entity. So this process then is called Sanatan Dharma. That the actual dharma of the living entity, or that of service, that has to be understood. When that's understood, then you can understand what is the living entity. What is his actual position? And then, when that's understood by us, then we can start to get an understanding of God. So when the living entity is servant, then that takes out the idea of controller and enjoyer. Because servant means he serves for the pleasure of whoever he's serving. Now, then this brings into... So then this Sanatan Dharma, we see that this aspect that, okay, so that means service to God. Service is the principle of the living entity. But if we look at it, any other service and service to God is temporary. We may serve the senses, may serve the community, may serve the nation, or we may serve so many religious principles, some rituals, but all those will be temporary. So we can't call this eternal. Right? The gods are not eternal, as being pointed out here, so that we can't actually call Sanatan. So only the Lord, he is eternal, and the living entity is eternal. So that relationship between the living entity and God, that we can call Sanatan Dharma, because that is service. Now, how are we going to apply that? How will that be shown? How will that be performed in this world? So then you must find some activity that matches this service to God. That is the point. Because religion, living entity, needs religion. They can't get by without it. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, these things they must have. These are natural needs of the conditioned living entity. But because of the temporary nature of them, then this creates a problem. And where do you get them from? Do we make them up? People make up so many things. So how are we going to do this? So now, if we want to serve, then we can serve so many lower levels if we want to make them up. But at the same time, is then the higher principle is then Krishna, God, he gives systems how to perform these activities. So the performance of those activities are still a material activity. They're pious. They're nice things. They're good. But it's still material. It's still not Sanatan Dharma. Dharma. We call it religion. But it can't be called Sanatan. Because unless it is, even though it's come from the Lord, unless it's connected to the Lord, it has no meaning. means everything in this world comes from the Lord. So it's not that only the proper Vedic culture and lifestyles come from the Lord. No, whenever there's light, there's darkness. So Krishna has created all these, so naturally their reverse will also be there. All the impious and sinful ways of lifestyle and thinking and behaving, that will also be part of the complete whole. So that's also coming. So just that it's come from God is not enough. That's important. It means if you want to start somewhere, why not start from the place where Krishna gives, what Krishna gives, what activities he gives, what ideas, what lifestyle, behavior, mentalities. Like, so that's the best start. But just because he gave it, it's not enough. Otherwise, so many people, they follow this culture that Krishna gives, and they're called Hindu. Right? And so many other follow various other things. They're called Christians, or Muslims, or Jains, or Buddhists. So just that they follow that, it's nice, it's pious. It's probably the most of all the different systems, religious systems, it'll probably be the most pious, most guaranteed to get you a good result. Because it's the most developed, deepest, and most consistent with the laws of God. Now, but still, unless it's connected to God, how it's not sanatan. So only when those activities are done in connection with the Lord, as service to the Lord, to please the Lord, in the mood of service, then it starts taking on the quality of Sanatana Dharma. Though it itself is not the Sanatana Dharma. It's the vehicle for the Sanatana. The service is the Sanatana Dharma. But it's the best medium through which to perform those activities. Right? So since you want to perform eternal activities for the pleasure of God, then naturally using God's system would be the best start. But God, he's created it all, but it doesn't attract him. What attracts him is the interaction between him and the living entities. Therefore, he's expanding. If he just wants to enjoy being God, he doesn't have to expand anything. It's already there within him. Everything's there. He's complete. But he expands for the interaction between the living entities. The opulence of Vaikuntha, the wonderfulness of the piety and the most and the beauty, and all these aren't what attracts him. What attracts him is the mood of service that is there through these things. So in the spiritual world, one has a spiritual form and the surroundings are spiritual, and through that we serve Krishna. So that devotion of serving in that environment, that is what pleases Krishna. But it is a completely transcendental environment. But here, in the conditioned state, we are surrounded by the material body, the subtle body, and the material world. And so we don't have these things to work with. But that doesn't matter, because it's all Krishna's. And if it's done to please Krishna, in service to Krishna, then it becomes nice. Then it becomes Sanatana Dharma. So this it's very important. That's why Sanatana Dharma doesn't mean Hinduism. Sanatana Dharma means when you take the Vedic injunctions and use them in Krishna's service. That becomes the perfect medium. But the Sanatana Dharma itself is the service of the living entity. Is that understood? It's a fine point. Just like you have affection for somebody and you give them a gift. Is the gift the love? Is the gift the affection? Or is the gift the medium through which you express the affection? That's the point. So here, all we have is material things, so we use those to express our service to Krishna. In the spiritual realm, then we have spiritual things to do it with. Right? Because we have to remember, Krishna is something else. Right? Krishna is beyond spiritual. We always think, yes, Krishna is spiritual. No, he's beyond that. He's the source of spiritual. He's something different. Right? So he's manifested all this, the spiritual and material world. So engaging that in his service, that is then the perfect medium for Sanatana Dharma. Therefore, that is the service is the perfection. That is why, in the beginning, even one is not very expert in the Vedic rituals and Vedic activities and culture and lifestyle. It doesn't matter. If the service mood is proper, it's pleasing to Krishna. Right? Just like a child in the community of adults, they're in no way expert at the adults, the way they speak, walk, dress, do anything, nothing. They can't do anything properly. But everybody's pleased with them because the mood is right. Right? And they work in the same field as the adults. They use the same things. Just they don't use them so well. But because the mood is nice, everybody's pleased. Like that. So that's the point. But it doesn't mean that we can eternally go on being three-year-olds. At some point, as we mature, naturally, if we're becoming sophisticated in other things, how we are, our economic development, our management skills, then why our culture is not also going to become more sophisticated? Otherwise it's not in balance. Right? If artha and kama only are sophisticated, and dharma and moksha are not, this is not balanced. This is not balanced. So that means one has to develop all of them together. That's why the Vedic culture is there. Prabhupada starts this conversation here of human life. So human life means to inquire about the Supreme. So therefore, then, the human culture comes with that. That's the Vedic culture. So the culture itself is to assist the service, nothing else. It itself on its own doesn't stand. It stands for piety. It will get you good result in the material world. You want wealth, you want beauty, you want education, you want whatever you want, material, then you're going to get it through practicing the Vedic culture. That's what it's for. It's meant for getting material benefit. But that's not enough. And that won't satisfy either ourselves or God. Therefore, the Vedic culture, the actual purpose of Vedic culture isn't for material gain. It's actually for the purpose of being used to express our relationship with the Lord in service. That's what it's for. And so we don't have to make up our own system to serve the Lord. The system's already there. We simply have to follow it. Right? Just like if you are learning something new, it is very difficult to concentrate on anything else. Like you're learning anything you learn, you're just completely focused on the elements of it. And then with time, when it becomes habitual, then actually the mood and all that you can put. In the beginning, very difficult. So now if you always have to constantly make up your own things and adjust them and that as the mind moves and everything else moves, then there'll never be a proper system. The mind will always be in movement. But if you have a system that's already there, and you just learn the system in the beginning, it may be a little bit difficult. Like that one will be focused on this and that. But generally one doesn't mind, because it's focused on things we're used to, material energy. But once that's there, then it just runs very nicely. You know how to dress, how to talk, how to behave, how to do all the different things. Then you feel comfortable. Then you can start to focus on actually our relationship with the Lord. This is many times where a misunderstanding is seen, is that one feels that when I become expert at the ritual or expert at the sadhana, then that is the sign of advancement alone. It is a sign that there's commitment, there's determination, there's practice, so naturally you become expert. But that's not the real sign. That's a preliminary sign, an external sign. But devotion is not just the body. It has to include the subtle body, the desires, like this. And there, that will engage the soul. So then one has to be able to see through all this, that the ritual itself is not the perfection. The performing the ritual for Krishna, that's the perfection. Right? Just because we can nicely put our cloth on and we don't look like a slob, okay, that's good. Right? Then we're a gentle person. But unless we're doing that to please Krishna, then it's not devotional service. Right? It's a ritual. It's pious, it's nice, it's Hindu. It's from the Vedic literature, it's great. right? Better than wearing other things. But still, it is not the perfection. Therefore, you see in this whole section here, just giving the essence, then service is the Sanatana Dharma. And the perfection of that service is its engagement in the relationship with the Lord. Right? The living entity will serve, but relationship must be performed, so that means in relationship to the Lord. That is then the perfection of Sanatana Dharma. From there, then one can expand it so much. One can discuss about the Vedic culture and its application in so many situations, in so much detail. But that is secondary to understanding this point of service. Otherwise, if not, then we get two things. We don't understand the ritual, why I should bother with this ritual. I've already made up my own ritual. Like that, my mother taught me, this or that. I learned something else from my friends. I read so many books, I come up with my own. Like that, what do I need a new ritual for? So therefore, then, one is not interested. So this is one danger. The other is that you think the ritual itself, that is the devotional service. So both are wrong. Both are wrong. The real thing is understanding I'm a servant of Krishna. So therefore, these activities, whatever I do, has to be engaged in Krishna's service. That has to be done. That must be done. Otherwise, it's not. It doesn't really come to the good standard of devotional service like that. So now, here, then the next aspect, okay, we're the servant, but the living entity has to be happy. Right? Okay, we're serving, we've accepted, okay, I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer. But now what about myself? Happiness, the living entity, Satchidananda, Ananda means happiness, they must be happy. If they're not happy, how will they run? What will go on? What will happen? So then here it's taking it to that step is that the Lord then comes to perform His pastimes, and that to show what is happiness, what is real happiness, the interaction between Him and His devotees. Then we see what is happiness. And happiness is nothing external, nothing material. The gaining of wealth or anything else, that is not happiness. Happiness is interaction with other people. Right? We want wealth. If we think about it, what do we want wealth for? Then, if we actually look, it's in connection with something else. Right? Just to have the money and sit on top of it, that's not what makes us happy. You have to have the money and it does something. You either spend it, right? And then spending it's going to be in relationship to something, right? Either to our body, so it's us and our body, us and the senses, or us and other bodies. Or we're trying to please someone else, the subtle body, right? Make them happy or this or that. We can do that through our money. Something we're trying to do. We're not just to have the money. Or we think, yes, it'll be, if I have money, then there'll be some security, this and that. But that security is still in relationship to what? Either our body or someone else's body or someone else's subtle body. So relationship you can't get away from. That's the reason we do anything. So we're looking for that. Whether the relationship is only with ourself or we include other living entities. But ourself means not the soul. It means the gross and subtle body here. Because the soul doesn't need any money at all. Right? Souls have been here eternally whether they have money or not. Like that. The having money has nothing to do with the eternality of the soul. So the happiness is still in relationship with others. So then we see relationship is the most essential point. That is what we're really looking for. So then we see is then the perfection of relationships is between the Lord and His devotees. And those devotees who are perfectly in perfection in their relationship with the Lord, between those devotees, each other. So then by seeing that, then we become inspired, attracted. The other aspect is we are attracted to the material world. We want to enjoy the material world. So that attracts us to the material world. So this is a problem. That makes us forget Krishna. Therefore, without the Sanatana Dharma, we're not going to get rid of the things that make us forget Krishna. But just because we've gotten rid of the things that make us forget Krishna doesn't mean that we remember Krishna. So there must be the positive, is how to enjoy with service by serving Krishna. And seeing how Krishna is happy, his devotees are happy, everybody's happy, right? If you see somebody happy, then you think, well, what do they have? Why are they happy? Then you look around, you know, what is it that makes them happy? Is what material thing, what relationship, what they're doing, you know, some philosophy, something. People are looking for that. If they see happy people, then they are attracted. They don't see happy people, then they're not attracted. They're miserable, and if you're miserable, then why do they have to follow you, right? They don't have to become a Hare Krishna to be miserable, right? They're already miserable, so there's nothing to attract them. But if devotees are happy, then they're attracted, right? So the only ones that are happy, actually, is the Lord and His devotees. They're happy, because they're not interested in anything here. They're not distracted by the material world. So we see their performance of duties is perfect, because it's connected completely with the Lord. That makes it perfect. So then that... Yeah. So then that establishes. That's the whole purpose here, is that we give up this idea. You know, if we're not the controller, okay, then we're servants. Right? But then what about this enjoying principle? I am the enjoyer. Okay, I can be jiva without controlling. Right? I can be myself without being a controller. But I can't be myself without enjoying. So, okay, there's these two aspects that I've made this mistake and come to this world. I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. So okay, we've corrected the one, I'm the controller, by saying I'm the servant. Then the enjoyer thing. Now most will say we just throw it out and you become either void or you merge into Brahman. But that's not, and even then they'll say you'll be happy doing that, though there's no interaction. But the inspiration is I will be happy. Right? We've never seen anyone be happy. Right? We just hear that you will be happy. Right? But Krishna comes and shows that yes, happiness must be there, but it's not on this platform, not on the material platform, it's on the spiritual platform. And he shows that it's not just himself is happy. You know, okay, Buddha is happy, or Shankaracharya may be happy, but that's it. Right? Here you have unlimited millions and millions of living entities who are happy, and they're with Krishna. And he's happy. So there's plenty of inspiration. Then we can completely give up this idea that keeps us here in this world. So that's explained in this. Are there any questions on this part? Yes. You have to be a little more loud. Question is that I meant to point that Krishna is beyond material and spiritual. So, but the living entity is also the same qualities as Krishna, Satchitananda. So, are they also beyond spiritual? See, Krishna, he is the source of everything. So, everything else is energy. He's not energy. Therefore, he's different. So even though he's, you can say they're all transcendental, but he's not, he's different. There's him, and then there's everything else. Right? He is the Shaktiman, or source of energy. And he is the reservoir of happiness. Everything's coming from him. So then the things that come then are of the same quality, but they are different. So because they've come from him, their natural position is to serve him. So he alone is actually the enjoyer, and everybody else is served. There's that shloka in Chaitanya Charitamrita, isn't it? Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arsabhita. Like that. Everybody. Good. So he is the Lord, everyone else is servant. So that's the difference. It means within the transcendental there is variety, just like within the material world there's variety, like that. So within the spiritual there's also variety, but it's all coming from Krishna. So he's the enjoyer, everyone else is servant. This gives rise to his coming as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because as the enjoyer he doesn't know what it means to be servant and what the servant enjoys. So if he wants to taste that, he has to come as his own devotee. Okay. So it's different. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Okay. Anything else on this? Okay. So next point. The abode of Sri Krishna is described in the Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, 6th verse. Natat bhashyate suryo na shashanko na bhavaka yad gatva nani vartante tad dhamma paramam mama. That abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or moon, nor by electricity. And anyone who reaches it never comes back to this material world. Bhagavad Gita 15:6. This verse gives a description of that eternal sky. Of course, we have a material conception of the sky, and we think of it in relationship to the sun, moon, stars, and so on. But in this verse, the Lord states that in the eternal sky, there is no need for the sun, nor for the moon, nor fire of any kind. Here, we see any kind. Electricity is one of the kinds of fire. That's why this point can be translated as fire or electricity or both, because it's simply a form of fire. Because the spiritual sky is already illuminated by the Brahma Jyoti, the rays emanating from the Supreme Lord. We are trying with difficulty to reach other planets, but it is not difficult to understand the abode of the Supreme Lord. The abode is referred to as Goloka. In the Brahma Samhita, it is beautifully described. Goloka evas nivasat yakilatma bhutaha. The Lord resides eternally in his abode, Goloka. Yet he can be approached from this world. And to this end, the Lord comes to manifest his real form, Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. When he manifests this form, there is no need for our imagining what he looks like. To discourage such imaginative speculation, he descends and exhibits himself as he is, as Shyamasundara. Unfortunately, the less intelligent deride him because he comes as one of us and plays with us as a human being. But because of this, we should not consider that the Lord is one of us. It is by his potency that he presents himself in his real form before us and displays his pastimes, which are prototypes of those pastimes found in his abode. In the effulgent rays of the spiritual sky, there are innumerable planets floating. The Brahma Jyoti emanates from the supreme abode, Krishna Loka, and the Anandamaya Chinmaya planets, which are not material, float in those rays. The Lord says, Natat bhashyate suryo na shashanko na pavaka na gatva na nivartante tadhama paramam mama. One who can approach that spiritual sky is not required to descend again to the material sky. In the material sky, even if we approach the highest planet, Brahmaloka, what to speak of the moon, we will find the same conditions of life, namely birth, death, disease, and old age. No planet in the material universe is free from these four principles of material existence. Therefore, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka Punar Avartinor Jana. The living entities are traveling from one planet to another, not by mechanical arrangement, but by a spiritual process. This is also mentioned, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata. No mechanical arrangement is necessary if we want interplanetary travel. The Gita instructs, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. The moon, the sun, and the higher planets are called Svargaloka. There are three different statuses of planets, higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. The Earth belongs to the middle planetary system. Bhagavad Gita informs us how to travel to the higher planetary systems, Devaloka, with a very simple formula, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. One need only worship the particular demigod of that particular planet, and in that way go to the moon, the sun, or any of the higher planetary systems. Yet Bhagavad Gita does not advise us to go to any of the planets in this material world, because even if we go to Brahmaloka, the highest planet, through some sort of mechanical contrivance, by maybe traveling for 40,000 years, and who would live that long? We shall still find the material inconvenience of birth, death, disease, and old age. But one who wants to approach the supreme planet, Krishnaloka, or any of the other planets within the material sky, or within the spiritual sky, will not meet with these material inconveniences. Amongst all of the planets in the spiritual sky, there is one supreme planet called Goloka Vrindavan, which is the original planet in the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. All of this information is given in Bhagavad Gita, and we are given through its instruction information how to leave the material world and how to begin a truly blissful life in the spiritual sky. So now the how to get there and that it actually exists. Krishna comes, he performs this pastime, so we can see, people have seen him. And then those people can say, yes, we have seen. Just like so many things we take on hearsay that someone else has said. We ourselves have not seen or experienced. But we say, yes, we believe in it because we have heard from people. So Krishna has come, he's performed his pastimes, therefore then people have seen this, and then we can hear from them. Then how to get to these planets? Then this process is there. You simply have to be in the mood of that planet you want. So the people from that planet, the heads of that planet, the controllers of that planet, you have to worship them. You have to perform the activities that they like, the rituals they like, the offerings they like, the activities they like. Like this. This all has to be done. You want to go to that place? You have to go. You want to go to the moon? That's where the Pitris or the forefathers go. There's a connection there. Pitri Loka and the moon, they're connected. You want to go to the sun? That's another thing. You want to go to Brahma's planet? That's another thing. So depending upon this, then different ritual is there, different worship, different that. But it's all coming from the scriptures. So if we want to go to Krishna's place, then we must worship Krishna. Very simple formula. So there's no need of any mechanics or anything else. It's simply, we want to go to Krishna, then we worship Krishna according to what he likes. Right? We want to go to the sun, we have to worship the sun god and worship him how he likes. Right? We can't do it some other way. He likes offerings of fire. Now if we offer him water, it won't be as pleasing. He likes fire. Right? So then that's his nature. Right? He is fire, so he likes offerings of fire. So Krishna is rasa, therefore he likes offering of service, activity, interaction. So because of that devotion, that is what then Krishna likes. You worship Krishna in devotion, you go to his place. Right? So that's why certain rituals are chosen. The Vedic culture is for everybody. Whatever planet you want to go for, then that system of worship, the person, their mood, the offerings, everything, it's all given. Right? And since it's coming from Krishna, it's based on the same principles. So therefore there'll be a similarity. So you'll find in culture, basically all those who follow the Vedic literatures can get along. Culturally they have no problem. Everybody will eat with their right hand and they'll wash their hands and mouth and feet after eating and all these different things. So those things will be basically the same. The difference lies in their philosophy, their goals, the particular technicalities of their ritual, who is their worshipable deity. But they all have a deity, they all have a ritual, they all have a mantra. So that's all the same, because it's given by Krishna. So for us, then Sanatana Dharma then means those activities that are given by Krishna that are approved by the Acharyas. Right? Here, Bhagavad Gita, all the Vaishnavas, all the impersonalists, everybody can follow it and attain perfection. They want to go to the heavenly planets, they can follow Gita, they'll get there. Right? But that's not the perfect use of Gita. So you have to then, therefore, our Acharyas, what they say to do, that becomes important. So of all the Vedic literature and all the Vedic ritual and all the different rules and regulations, those that are given by our Acharyas, that is for the purpose of taking us to Krishna in Vrindavan. That is the purpose of those things. We don't follow our Acharyas, and then we make up our own ritual, take a little from here, a little from there, make some nice khichdi. Then who knows where we're going to go? We take ritual from here, that from there, like that. We have to be very, very careful that we follow our Acharyas. Then we'll get to the place where they live. You don't follow them, we won't get to their place, right? You follow Krishna and his Acharyas, then you get to that place. Simple formula. That's the thing. The Vedic culture is very, very simple. Though its detail is practically unlimited. It's coming from the unlimited, so it's also very great. But the principle is very simple. You worship Krishna according to the Acharyas, you'll get there. Very simple. No other need. Then, how to worship, how to follow, how to apply, what is the... Then, that's detail. That is detail. So here Krishna is then pointing out is that better not go to these other planets. You can do it. You worship the demigods, you'll get there. But it's temporary. You'll find the same problems as here. That's all. Right? It's not any better. It's the same problem. Right? Some guy is living out in the street, right? And somebody is living in the 5-star hotel. They both have the same birth, death, old age, and disease is there for both of them. There's no difference. No difference. Just one may be a little more comfortable, but because you get used to the comfortable, if a little bit is not comfortable, then it's a problem. Right? The man lives in the street, whether he's inside or outside, it's the same. Right? Because there is no inside or outside. Right? It's either hot or cold or wet. If the man is in the nice fancy hotel, when he comes out of the hotel, it's hot or it's cold or it's wet. So then they suffer. No one gets away from their suffering. No one gets away. So therefore Krishna's Prabhupada here is not recommending that we try going to any other planet. Why bother? Same problem will be there. Therefore, just go to Krishna's planet. And how to go to Krishna's planet? Then you follow in the footsteps of those devotees who are worshipping Krishna. Right? And how to understand those devotees? Then that's the Acharyas. They tell us what to do. Okay, is there any questions on this?
Stop. back to Krishna. But then the realization, which is supposed to come, it's done in a way where the intention, the desire for the result, then it seems that you have it better.
Yeah. Means it's just like you want to get good at that thing. So that is the need. That's the goal. And then with practice you become good at it. So once you've attained the goal, then what is the purpose of it? Then it just becomes a habit. It's a good habit, but it's just a habit. So then that's the problem. So unless the goal is to develop love for Krishna, and the acharyas say that we should perform these activities in connection with getting Krishna, then they're always alive. So even though with time we've become expert at them, there's still how it connects to Krishna. How does this activity bring me closer to Krishna? How does it uplift me? How does it purify? Or how does it attract me? Or like this. So those things are there. You see, there's some place in India you go, so many samajas, this, that, they all sit down and read Ramayana or this or that and so many things, and then as soon as it's over they all go back to whatever they're doing, and so it becomes a ritual to do. They like it and it's attracted, so it's good. One must hear. But it's just basically it's a pious thing to do, it's a nice thing to do. They're not trying to deepen and understanding more their relationship with, that's not their goal. So that's the difficulty. Is even the nicest thing can turn into a ritual. Like that. Rituals are good, because then within that you don't have to be distracted. Once you practice a ritual, then it happens. You don't have to think about it. Like you know how to put your cloth on. You don't have to think about it. It just happens. And during that time you could be thinking of Krishna. That's what one's trying to get to. So these one has to be careful of this. This is the meaning of vichar. Vichar means to discuss and contemplate the particular item of devotional service from many, many different angles. As we always hear it from one angle or always think of it in one way, if we are very determined in that, we can go very deep because it's unlimited, so it doesn't matter. But the idea is if we hear from different people and different assemblies, different situations, and we try to apply it in our life, then we'll see there's so many different situations. Then it will give us more and more understanding and deeper, deeper realization. So the ritual is not bad. Ritual, if it becomes, it becomes disconnected from Krishna, and from that goal as part of the process to gain, then ritual has to help us understand the relationship or to help us express the relationship. Right? And it should get us the goal of prema. Right? You follow the process should give you the result. Right? What your goal is, your process should get that for you. If it doesn't, you're using the wrong process. So if our goal is prema, that means the process we use should get us prema. Right? So that means then that has to develop our relationship with Krishna. Right? Because that's the first principle. What is the relationship? So then the ritual has to be performed with that in mind. Ritual, I mean any activity that is either, you know, sanctioned in the according to the shastras and acharyas, or that we create ourselves for our own, you know, lifestyle and activities and dealings like that. Does that make any sense? Any other question? Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samavitā Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Prema Nanda.